along with Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Again, recapping, Notre Dame-Wake Forest postponed due to the coronavirus issue within the Notre Dame football program. According to a press release, 7 positive tests from 94 that took place on Monday. So now a total of 13 players are in isolation, 10 are in quarantine. Notre Dame and Wake Forest have the same bye week next week, but is that possible? That's a big question mark at this time. Well, every Tuesday at this time, we talk to Brian Driscoll. He is the publisher of IrishBreakdown.com, and he has been writing on this subject since the news broke at about 3 o'clock this afternoon. Brian, thanks for taking the time to do this. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was hoping we could talk about South Florida, but it looks like we're going to have other things to discuss tonight.
Yeah, maybe we can sneak in something toward the end. But let me just start with this, Brian. Again, you're following this postponement on your website, irishbreakdown.com. You've been providing updates. Let me just ask you straight out, where do we stand right now about the possibility of these two teams making up this contest the following Saturday?
The sources I've talked to are not optimistic that that's going to happen. And if you, when you look at the protocols, the players that have tested positive maybe could come back next weekend for the game, but all the players that are out for contact tracing, and there's going to ultimately, you know, according to my sources, be more players out for contact tracing than test positive, they're out automatic 2 weeks. So they wouldn't be able to return even if they tested on Monday. And I'm hearing that there's going to be more people today and tomorrow that could be out. They can't be back till the Monday after the Wake Forest potential rescheduled game during that bye week. So you'd still be out a lot of players. And another issue is, again, this is still unconfirmed, but what I've been told by sources so far who've been spot on this, there's a couple positions that are being heavily hit by this. So it's not just sporadic, a player here, a player there, different positions. There are certain positions that have been hit heavily, which also factors into the ability to make up that game.
Brian, I'm looking at the university's COVID dashboard, and if you look back to last Wednesday, there have been 18 total, you know, this is according to what's on the dashboard, 18 total positives since last Wednesday. And so with the number that we're getting from the football team, it's a really high percentage of football players. Do you have any indication from your sources on, you know, why that might be?
Yeah, honestly, Sean, I've heard a couple different theories, and I don't know how comfortable I am really diving into those because right now there hasn't been a definitive word given. I don't know. You know, one thing I've heard is, you know, obviously parents have been in town and perhaps somebody brought it that way. You know, these kids are going to classes, and, you know, you read the science, the masks are not 100% guaranteed to, you know, to keep you from getting COVID, and it doesn't take very many people to get it for this to spread. And I've heard of a couple other, theories about it that probably we should wait to see how they're vetted out before I discuss it too much. But okay. You know, that's the thing is when one kid gets it and you don't have symptoms, then you never know who. Then it can spread enough to do damage. Because again, we're talking 7 kids tested positive out of over 100. That's a pretty small percentage. But when you add in the contact tracing aspects of it, that's where those numbers really start to pile up as far as people that are out.
Brian Driscoll, IrishBreakdown.com, joining us on WSBT Radio. Notre Dame Wake Forest postponed due to the COVID outbreak within the Notre Dame football team. 99.9% of people listening to this, Brian, have never coached football before. So on behalf of them, I'm going to ask this question. You mentioned a moment ago your sources are telling you that there are a couple of positions that probably have been hit harder than the others on this Notre Dame football team. I think we had a discussion amongst ourselves last week about the possibility, well, if something happened, you could move Drew White to the buck and Bo Bauer could play the mic. So there are some positions that are interchangeable, or there are players that have the ability to play different positions. Are there certain positions on a football team in which it is really impossible to band-aid the situation by moving people around? Quarterback obviously comes to mind right off the bat, but what positions would you talk about right away?
I think offensive line is one. You know, you're not going to move Dalen Hayes over to offensive tackle. You start getting a situation where, you know, only two or three offensive linemen get sick, and then all of a sudden you lose another five or six out of quarantine because of contact tracing. Now all of a sudden you don't have enough bodies to really go through practice. And you're getting close on having bodies. LSU went through that when they had to cancel practices in fall camp because they were down to like three or four healthy offensive linemen. Not healthy, I should say, but eligible offensive linemen because the combination of guys getting COVID plus the contact tracing. So I think that's one, and I think that it's not so much putting a Band-Aid on it. It's just the concerns that I'm hearing is just having enough guys to have that position group have enough bodies. And I think that's one of the issues that you have. And we've seen this before with other schools. There was, an FBS school that had to cancel a game recently or postpone a game because they didn't have enough offensive linemen. So, and I'm not dropping hints like if they're in offensive line. That's not what I'm saying. That's just happened to be the positions where other schools have been hit in the past.
Do you think that ultimately because of the 14 days and the, you know, with the contact tracing people, do you think that ultimately, you know, even if nothing ends up getting played next week, October 10th, Florida State, do you think that could be in jeopardy too? Just what are your thoughts just in terms of preparation, trying to potentially even get ready for that one?
I think the only way Florida State gets in trouble is if over these next 3-4 days, it continues to spread, and we see more and more go out because of just the deadline. So, for example, if, you know, there's some more kids that are out today, then, you know, and tomorrow, well, those guys can all come back Tuesday, you know, Monday to Tuesday of the following day, depending on how you count the 14 days. If you include the day that they're out as 14, then if they're out, you know, test positive on a Wednesday, they can come back on a Tuesday if you count the day that they're initially out. And then, you know, all the guys that tested positive that didn't play in the game or the contact tracing guys that didn't play in the game on Saturday against South Florida are now going to be eligible to be back for that game the whole week. And then the guys that, you know, were quarantined on Monday this week will come back. And the nice thing about that is they don't practice on Monday anyway. Mm-hmm. Tuesday is really the first practice of the week. So if guys are coming back on Monday, that gives them enough time to really get back into game shape and get their numbers where they need to be.
Brian, I'm not sure how much you heard from the last time the Irish had to cancel some practices, three of those in August. I was wondering then, was the coaching staff still doing like Zoom conferences at that particular time to keep the mental side of the game going for these guys? And I bring that up because we're on pause right now. These guys are not going to be getting together in any capacity for a while. So I'm just wondering what we should expect the coaches to be able to do while the pause button is hit and the group can't get together. Do you think they'll be Zooming the players to try to keep the healthy ones locked in on football?
Well, I think they're going to be doing that to keep everyone involved in football, because if you're out on quarantine, you just can't be around people. There's nothing that says you can't be part of a Zoom call or you can't go through like a film session with your coach or with players, things like that. So they'll still have access to, you know, their computers and phones and those things. So they can do 20 hours, and these aren't typical injuries where, you know, you're injured, you can't go out and practice. These are just guys who aren't allowed to be around people and have to be in isolation. So I think we'll absolutely see that. And again, so much of this is uncharted territory, Darren, but, you know, I absolutely think we'll see the coaches, you know, maybe this is a couple of days to, hey, we really need to work on our dime packet. So here's a couple things we're going to work on. Here's a couple things we're going to talk about. Let's watch this film together. Let's watch this together. And it'll just kind of, it's almost like you get a 2-week bye there where you can, hey, here's what we did the first 2 weeks. Let's do some self-scouting and let's figure out some areas we need to work on and figure out ways we can get those things going.
Well, I'll get off the COVID a little bit and just ask you what you think about Brian Kelly. He apologized for those halftime comments that he made about being tired of being the nice guy. What did you think? Did he need to apologize for anything?
Heck no. I mean, first of all, he didn't say anything. He wasn't like he was swearing at him. He wasn't taking shots at the other coach. This is what Notre Dame needs to be. I mean, this is, you know, Lou Holtz, I mean, think about one of the greatest, you know, memories of the Catholics versus convicts it's the whole thing. And then Miami, Notre Dame, it's the whole St. Jimmy Johnson's you-know-what for me. I mean, if the NBC cameras were back there then, you know, gosh, Lou Holtz wouldn't have made it that past third or fourth year on the program. I mean, you know, it's just like this is the locker room. This is a coach trying to inspire his players to go out and give their all in a very violent physical game. If that's inappropriate, then what are we doing here, you know? So I thought his comments were perfectly fine. I want Notre Dame to have that edge, and the only way they're going to compete for championships is if they have that kind of edge. I thought his comments were great. I thought the players responded to it. You could hear them responding to it, and they went out and played the way you want a team to play. They put South Florida away. There was no, hey, let's play dirty, let's take cheap shots, let's get in their face and talk trash. There was none of that. I thought his comments were great. And I was disappointed that he felt the need to apologize because he didn't have anything to apologize for, in my opinion.
Is that something, as a head football coach, you would prefer to stay in-house, though?
I would prefer everything that is said in the locker room to stay in-house. I mean, I remember going back to, you know, Bob Davey had a comment way back, I think it was 2011, something about Freddy Krueger, 2012, something about Freddy Krueger something. And I remember him getting asked about it. He didn't know that it was published. And I just, to me, a locker room is a place where you need to be able to think, what do I have to say to communicate to my players? Do I have to chew a guy out? Do I have to give a guy a hug? Do I have to, you know, what are the things I need to be said? Maybe there's a phrase. Maybe I'm talking about, you know, a word that means something to us in that group that other people don't know what that word means. And I got, you just shouldn't have to think about that. So I would like to get the cameras out of the locker room. Or at least give Brian Kelly the ability to have some editing power afterwards. You want to put it in the Notre Dame video a couple days later, fine. But the locker room needs to be their place. And look, we get them on the field. We get to watch them play in the field. We get all that kind of stuff. The locker room needs to be their safe place, their safe haven. It needs to be just for the program. We don't need to know what goes on in there.
Brian, what do you think was the biggest thing that Notre Dame got out of that lopsided win against USF Saturday?
I think there's two things for me, Sean. Number one is, you know, I said before the game, I don't care how many yards the Notre Dame offense runs for. I really don't. You cannot necessarily play great and still rack up a bunch of yards against an inferior opponent. It's the how they played. And I loved the physicality of the offensive line. I loved the push they got. I loved the force they had, the edge they had. I thought Jarrett Patterson had probably the best game he's had in the Notre Dame uniform. He was getting up to the second level really well, which has been a problem for them for really a year and a half. So it showed me that they really emphasized needing to get better in those areas after struggling against Duke. And I think the other thing that helped them, too, was you saw Dalen Hayes had 16 snaps. Sadi Ogundeji had like 16 snaps. Jeremiah Owusu only had maybe 30 snaps. Kurt Hinds barely didn't even have 20 snaps. Myra Tungvalu didn't have 20 snaps. Nick McLeod only had like 14 snaps. So you were able to take a lot of wear and tear early in the season off of your players' bodies that should help them be fresher as you get into November and the schedule really ramps up.
Brian Driscoll, irisbreakdown.com, talking Notre Dame football. So the multiple tight end sets, 12, 13, 14 personnel. How important do you believe that will be to the offense moving forward? And part two is that something that, at least in small doses, could be effective against Clemson?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you're talking about two of your best athletes are tight ends when you look at Tommy Tremble and Michael Mayer. Two of your most dynamic players are tight ends. So it needs to be a big part of what you do. And I love the fact that on the first play of the game, they came out, and I believe a three tight end set, and threw the ball downfield. That sends a message that, hey, when we go to this big set, we're not just going to run it down your throat, right? You can't just load the box with 8-9 guys because this kid right here, number 24, Tommy Tremble, can run by your safety. You know, and so I thought that was a message sent. And I think three of the first four plays of the game were passes. So I thought that was kind of a strategy that I liked. You know, just don't come out and beat up an inferior team with that because you're not going to be able to do that against Clemson. But if you can be versatile with that personnel group and throw the ball downfield, you know, take your shots, also run the ball, it can be effective. But it's not something you can run 75% of the time against Clemson. You're going to need to get those other position groups ready, whether it's more two running back sets, whether it's more three receiver sets, or even in the two or three tight end sets, instead of having Javon McKinley in the game, maybe put Braden Lindsey in the game so you have a little bit more of that deep threat where they really can't get too aggressive because now our fastest player at receiver is going to be isolated against your corner. That might cause teams to think about. So I think they're still working with those kind of things, but you know, I think it's definitely something that they need to force defenses to prepare for week after week after week.
Well, and that's, I mean, do you, Brian Kelly was essentially saying yesterday that, that, you know, this tight end heavy offense is who they are. Do you think it's really that, or is it, you know, like still there is sort of an adjustment to come along with it?
Well, there needs to be an adjustment. I mean, it is who they are because they're not, they're really, there's two reasons they're that right now, Sean, and that is, one, they've got really good talent at tight end. And number two is because the receiver play has been mediocre right now. And the quarterback play, to be honest, has been mediocre. So, yeah, it's great that, that worked against Duke and South Florida, but you're not going to beat Clemson and Pitt and Louisville and North Carolina, all of them, if your receivers and your quarterback aren't playing better than they are right now. So, yeah, it's good that they have that identity. You guys know my stance on this. You need to have something that you can hang your hat on. There needs to be a formation, a personnel grouping, plays that you can say, hey, when it's a big moment and it's we need to get that third and one or we need to put that drive together, this is the personnel group that we feel confident in. You have to have that identity. But you can't be that for 60 minutes unless – they're just really dynamic, and I don't think a receiver unit can be that way, but I don't know if a tight end unit can provide you the same versatility and flexibility and explosiveness you need to really go outscore the better teams on the schedule.
Brian, I'm probably going to make you cringe a little bit with the terminology I'm about to use, because I think this is more of a fan media term more so than what coaches think about. Maybe I'm wrong. But I'll just ask you point blank. Do you think ultimately Ian Book is a game manager?
Yeah, I mean, that's what he's been so far in his career, yeah. And I think if we're going to use that in the proper manner, he's been that. But I don't even think he's been that the first two games. I mean, to me, a game manager is not someone – I think game manager, to me, used correctly, is someone who it's almost like you're – there's two types of point guards, right? There's the point guards that score 25, 30 points a game, and they control the ball. And then there's the point guards like John Stockton, right? And to me, when I think of John Stockton, I think that's the ultimate game manager. He's not going to score 30 points a game. He's not going to be flashy, but he's going to get the ball where it needs to go so that your other players can be effective. And right now, I don't think Ian Book is doing that. When he's at his best, he is a game manager. But he's also a game manager that has enough ability as a runner and to throw the ball downfield where he can scare you. He just has to start being that guy. And I've said this before, if you go back and look at his first four or five games in 2018, if you can combine that with the deep ball and running we saw last year in 2019, that's a really good quarterback. But is he still a game manager in nature? Yeah, because he's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not Justin. He's not someone against Clemson that's going to put the team on his shoulders and make, you know, Pat Mahomes type throws and, you know, Kyler Murray type runs to carry the team. That's just not who he is, and that's okay. He doesn't have to be that.
I wanted to ask you about Jafar Armstrong because, I mean, we've seen him make a couple catches. I really like what he can do in space. Just the pure running between the tackles, that doesn't seem to be his thing. Is there a place for him in the offense where he's, you know, contributing in the first half of a game in doubt versus, you know, later in the second half of a game like we saw Saturday?
Yeah, you know what I would do if I was Tommy Reese's, you know, football advisor, you know, his someone he would go to for hints and tips, which I am not. I would say, hey, you know what? Go back to the 2018 season, and I want you to study how Chip Long used Jafar Armstrong against Ball State, and I want you to go look at how he used Jafar Armstrong against Navy, where he was sort of that complimentary piece with Tony Jones and then later in the year with Dexter Williams and Tony Jones, where he would get some plays out of the backfield, but then you'd put him in the slot. You'd have him run routes. You'd throw screens to him. You really mix it up how you use him, because if your receivers are struggling the way that they have, there's one of two things you can do. One is you just kind of stubbornly say, well, we're just going to go three tight ends and hopefully that works. Or B, you can say, okay, we've got some other athletes who can do some things. We've got Jafar Armstrong. We've got Chris Tyree. We've got Kyren Williams who can play in the slot. We've got Kendall Abdul-Rahman who's played quarterback and receiver, you know, in quarterback in high school, receiver at Notre Dame. So let's utilize some of these guys in different ways. You know, let's go with our two tight ends, two back set. You know, put Braden Lindsay out there. So now you've got two really athletic guys in the backfield. You got your two tight ends, and now you've got your fastest guy. Well, on the next play, after running two tights and running the ball, you can go four. You go empty, and you've got Tommy Tremble, Chris Tyree, Kyren Williams, Braden Lindsay, and Michael Mayer on the field. That's pretty good, you know. And I think there's some versatility they can get out of that. So I think as Coach Reese gets more used to what his personnel can do and what they're showing him he can do, I hope that we'll see more versatility But I think DeFarge is the guy that you can find a role for. You just can't have him be a dominant player in the offense because you just can't know if he's going to be out there after every week.
Brian, tell our listeners what's happening at irishbreakdown.com, including your new premium section.
Yeah, that's a great question, Darren, because I had Wake Forest stuff planned for the rest of the week, and I got to figure out what we're going to do now. So I am going to have something out kind of talking about, you know, why, you know, what this means for Notre Dame in the big picture, talking about if they don't make up this game, what does that mean for Notre Dame and its potential playoff resume? So definitely keep your eye out for that. But I think this is going to be a good opportunity to dive into some recruiting film here over the next week and start, you know, getting back into doing some analysis for a recruiting standpoint, since we're probably not going to have games for a couple weekends. So I think that's obviously going to be a big part of what we're doing. And as you know, you'll be a part of the Irish Breakdown community for $5.99 a month or $59.99 a year. And you also get the Sports Illustrated magazine with that, and you'll also get access to all of the NFL sites, the premium content for all of our NFL sites. You can find that at irishbreakdown.com.
All right, irishbreakdown.com. The publisher is Brian Driscoll. He'll keep you updated on what his sources are telling him as this story unfolds. Notre Dame and Wake Forest postponed. They're not going to play this Saturday, unfortunately. Brian, thank you so much for your information, your knowledge, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. Brian Driscoll, publisher, irishbreakdown.com.